Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
No Mark Willard this week. He's out in Hawaii, so it's Dibs, FP, and Grandy for one more hour on this Wednesday on 95.7 The Game, the day after the trade deadline. The Giants lose last night in a relatively uninspiring fashion. They're back at it again tonight against the Oakland A's. Final Bay Bridge series ever. Oakland A's will be no more after this season, so take advantage of it while you can. Giants today is at Oracle Park tonight. Logan Webb on the bump for the Giants. Lamont Wade now leading off. Luciano still in the lineup. He's DHing and batting eighth. Couple other changes from last night, but nothing all that crazy. As a reminder, if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And while you're there, check out how the Morning Roach reacted to the Giants' moves at the deadline. And again, last night's uninspiring loss to the Oakland A's. To take you guys behind the scenes, we're talking about and just how great Dave Fleming is during the last commercial break. And he, of course, was on with Bonte and Shasky on the Morning Roast earlier today. We've already visited or heard some of the things that he said. I wanted to run this past you before we wrap up our Giants conversation for the day. Fleming talking about the disappointment of this season. Of course, the goal is to still make the postseason. Farhan said as much yesterday at his post-deadline presser. Fleming was responding to that and all the Giants fans' frustration. And here's what Flem had to say earlier today with Bonte and Shasky.
To me, the season is going to end in disappointment if they're not in the playoffs. I will be very disappointed if they're not in. Does that mean what you're implying? I don't know. They're in a weird spot right now. They are. And it's, you know, all of this, I said this to you guys before, all of this is also framed by what's happening in L.A.
Yep.
You know, it's like it's really hard to stomach. And we were just down there again. And I can't tell you how frustrating it is to be down there and to watch the whole thing. It just is. It's just a bad contrast right now. And one thing that I would like to see from the Giants, all of us, everybody, is to start taking that a little more personally, to start being a little more pissed off at what's happened down there. And the fact that year after year, they're sustaining that level of success. And we're trying our best to catch up, but the best so far hasn't been good enough.
You hear that from Flem? He's given all of us license to be pissed off.
Yeah.
You got to be upset by this. You're the San Francisco freaking Giants, and the Dodgers are lapping you.
I think he was saying the Giants should be pissed off.
I think he said everyone should be pissed off.
Yeah, I think he was referring to the team and the organization, the front office, the players, and the fans. I don't think they need license to be pissed off.
And they're already pissed off anyway.
Yes, and I was hearing him say that to the team and, you know, to the coaching staff, and I'm sure there are a lot of Giants. And I think about Bob Melvin just hearing that comment, a guy who is, you know, born a Giant
a
and
lifer,
from the Bay Area and all the rest of it. And, you know, he suffered through it down in San Diego when the Dodgers were cuffing them around, too. And I'm sure that he's pissed off and furious. And, you know, the fix is not an easy fix. It's got to be a complete organizational, maybe not overhaul, but you've got to find a way to get your prospects as good as theirs, your major leaguers as good. Your hitting is good. Everything as good. The only thing that you have ownage on them, and it's not a huge gap, is the ballpark. Because I do think Dodger Stadium is it's a nice place to see a game.
It's a great ballpark.
It's no Oracle Park.
It's a great yard.
But it's a good yard. It's clean. Great weather.
It's timeless.
Exactly.
Organizational attitude is what you're looking for there. There has to be an attitude. Enough. We're pissed. That's it. Enough of this. We're sick of hearing about the Dodgers. We're sick of watching them win the division every year. Enough. That's it.
What's crazy is you brought up, you know, you got to get the farm system as good as the Dodgers. And we just so often talk about, well, they always got all these new players coming up through the farm system and they're replenishing all the freaking time. Oddly enough, and maybe it's hard to recognize because the team, the major league team has been so good. Their farm system has kind of dried up a little bit lately. They don't have these guys coming up every single year anymore. They're still willing to go out and trade some of their players, their young developing players to get major leaguers in here. They just did that with Jack Flaherty, and their farm system, I think, is still probably ranked higher than the Giants at this moment. But it's not as if they've got these guys coming through every single year anymore, but they're finding new ways to go out and compete. And obviously it helps when you are in LA, and being there kind of sells itself. And it's why Ohtani came there, and it's why all these other players are willing to go there. And it was Freddie Freeman. You made a trade for Mookie Betts. We all forget that. They acquired Mookie by trading away a number of really good players who you thought would be really good players for the Red Sox to get Mookie Betts. The Dodgers aren't just this incredible farm system anymore that's allowing them to do all this. They're finding other ways to get it done, and the Giants haven't been able to match that. There's also another team down there in Southern California who's doing it. The Padres, they haven't done it consistently, and they haven't won a World Series doing it yet. And, you know, we heard Bobby Evans, who was on with us a couple of hours ago, talking about AJ Preller and whether or not he's been making his moves maybe to save his job or not. But they haven't been scared sending away prospects. All the guys they sent to Washington to get Juan Soto, Mackenzie Gore, really good young pitcher, CJ Abrams, a really good young position player, and they get Juan Soto in here. It doesn't work. Okay, they pivot. They trade Juan Soto to the Yankees, and they get a number of really good guys back in return for that. And that's just one example. They got Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. and all these other moves. There's just so many other teams in proximity to the Giants, both in location and I don't know, historical standing, that are just lapping the Giants in a number of different ways. And as a Giants fan, I think what Flem is talking about, that's what makes it all the more frustrating, because it's seemingly only this historic organization that is going through all these struggles.
Yeah, and if it was one continuous season from when Farhan took over till now, if it wasn't six seasons but just one season, first of all, it'd be a long season, but you'd be 103 games behind the Dodgers over the last six years since Farhan took over.
To treat that. You'd it's be, a fire tweet.
You'd be 103 back with...
over six seasons.
Yeah. I mean, the only season where you got them, you beat them by one game, but... Yeah,
you won 107, they won 106.
That's it. Even the year, the fluky year, they won 43, the Giants won 29. That's a 14-game difference. And I know that one, you could throw that one out, whatever. It doesn't matter, but first year of Farhan, 2019, Dodgers 106, Giants 77... So there's a 29-game cushion, and, you know, routinely it's been the Dodgers have had the better of them other than the 1 year. And even in that 1 year, the Giants win 107, the Dodgers won 106. So, yeah, the gulf between the two organizations, it's infuriating. And I love to hear Dave Fleming, you know, put his emotion to it and say it with his chest, because it's been more than just an anomaly year here and there. The Giants have been flat mediocre, and the Dodgers have been unbelievable.
Just so cool, my first Giants Dodgers games, and growing up a Giants fan, and I was so pissed at the Giants for non-tendering me a contract, because I had too good a year. They didn't want to pay a bench player that much, so they get two rookies to do what I did, that I was going to show them I'm signing with the Dodgers. Half the reason I signed with the Dodgers was to like a middle finger to the Giants. Like, I'll show you, I'm going to go down there and just crush. From day one, I looked at that jersey on me, I was nauseous. It's like, what did I do, dude? Like, why did I do this? This is not how I mean, literally in spring training when it was in Vero Beach back then, I'm just like, this is, and I never admitted it to my family. Like, this was a bad move. And there was two other teams that came after me in free agency. And the Tigers were right there with the Dodgers, and I grew up a Tigers fan. Like, the one regret I have in my life is that I signed with the Dodgers instead of the Tigers, because Phil Garner was a manager of the Tigers, and he wanted me bad.
Old scrap iron?
But here's the point. Like, I don't know if this whole thing, I don't know if players today look at it this way. We some guys used to joke in the clubhouse, oh, this is more for the fans than us. But, like, growing up in Northern California and sitting in the bleachers at Candlestick for Dodgers-Giants games as a kid, and knowing what that rivalry meant, maybe it meant more to me as a Giant, but, like, I wanted to kick their ass every time we played them. And in the minor leagues, when you're coming up, and I played the Dodgers at a few levels on the minor leagues, like, all their players were bigger, and, like, these corn-fed Nebraska dudes that were, like, 6'5" and handsome and first-round picks. And you just wanted to kick their ass, because they just all just walked around like their ass didn't stink, right? And A-ball. Like, Mike Piazza walking around like, ah, and then, like, I could name you Raul Mondesi and all these guys in A-ball, they're the Dodgers. And the Yankees farm system was the same way. He wanted to kick their ass. JT Snow is a Yankee, like this good-looking blonde-haired guy with blue eyes. Just like, screw this guy. He's a Yankee. He ended up being one of my best favorite teammates ever. But like, that's what, I don't know if it's that anymore. I don't know if that rivalry has that. I mean, maybe it's the ballpark. I think Oracle can get rowdy, but there was nothing like a Giants-Dodgers game at Candlestick Park.
For sure.
That was gnarly, dude. Like, you were taking your life into your hands.
I was there that night where they had the doubleheader against the Dodgers, and he used to be able to jump out of the bleachers and go retrieve home runs in left field, because there was about a 30 or 40-yard gap between the home run fence and the football bleachers, and so you'd sit out there, and if there was a home run, you were allowed to jump out of the bleachers. Think about that now.
Scramble
for it. And that night against the Dodgers, it was a doubleheader. That was the fightingest baseball doubleheader in history. There were more than 100 players or 100 fans ejected. And it got so bad that in the second game, on pop flies to shortstop, fans were jumping out of the bleachers and running and jumping on the outfield fence. And I was in left, because I was a bleacher kid a lot back then, because it was the cheap seats.
Yeah.
And there was like blood in the aisles. There were so many fights. And it was
the good old
Candlestick,
days. The good old days when people bled at Dodger Giants.
And I wonder what your feelings were when you came back as a Dodger, because that was the first year of Pac Bell Park. And I'm just looking at your game log because I like, it's time to geek out on FP's baseball.
It's a good trivia question.
And you go, you know, you guys go on the road to Montreal and New York, and you end the trip as a Dodger. You come to the brand new ballpark, your childhood favorite team. This is this gleaming new park, 2000, it opened.
Kevin Elster was drunk with me the night before at the hotel bar.
Kevin Elster, my God.
He didn't think he was playing, and we walked into the clubhouse, the first game ever at Pac Bell, and he was in the lineup. And he goes, I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Opening
today.
Day, the first day, the first game at that ballpark, right, was Dodgers-Giants.
He came out of retirement. He had a crazy spring training. He made the team. And Kevin Elster, if you remember, was a heartthrob on those 80s Mets team. He was like, every girl was in love with Kevin Elster. He had the mullet, the blue eyes. He had the Hollywood looks. And he played on the craziest team ever, the 1986 Mets, where those guys stayed out till 5 a.m. every night. So that was embedded in him. And then he took like 2 years off because he was just burnt out in baseball. And Davey Johnson texted him, who was his manager in New York, and said, hey, you want to come out and try out for the Dodgers? And he hit like 600 in spring training. So he's like, there's no way. Vizcaino, I think, was our shortstop. And he's like, there's no way I'm playing tomorrow. So he had a bunch of pops at the hotel bar before opening day. It was a day game. And Kurt Reeder's pitching, so lefty, and Ellie's in there. And he hit 3 home runs that day. And everybody thought Pac Bell Park was a launching pad. So he hit 3 home runs the very first day. But I am the only player in the history of the world that played the last game at Candlestick Park as a Giant and the first game at Pac Bell Park as a Dodger. And I got in there late. I went into left field for Gary Sheffield in the first game.
I mean, that's wild.
Like the seventh inning, I think.
The memory.
Yeah.
The memory is incredible. And it's one of my favorite parts about doing radio with you, because you bring up a random thing, you tell a Kevin Elster story, and just another tidbit. It just had me thinking, because you're a lifelong Giants fan, and you go and you're a Dodger.
It didn't fit. It never fit. It was never a fit. And like I said, it was weird from the first day. I came from a team in the 99 Giants that were, we did everything together, the wives and the kids and barbecues on off days, and everybody was super tight. And I couldn't believe, coming from the Expos, how the Giants treated their players. And I'm like, this is heaven. I'm playing for my childhood team, and I want to play here forever. And then they released me after, I mean, I had a good year, and they released me. And I guess Dusty fought for me, and I guess Sabian fought for me, but the ownership didn't want to pay me what I was going to make in free agency that year. So I was going to show the Giants, and I signed with the Dodgers. And I always say I was a good Giant down there. I hit 196. I did my part.
Right.
I did my part.
I got you at 197, but
was it 197?
Point well taken, yeah. They rounded you up.
Thanks for rounding me. Dude, but I was miserable there. Nobody did anything together. Like, it was back then there wasn't Uber, so it was 25 cabs after every game. Nobody hung out on the road. Like, JT, Richie, Billy, and Billy Miller, Richie Aurelia, JT, and I, if it was a night game, we had a rule that we had to go have beers on the road, because we're not going to sit in our hotel room and think about the game, good or bad. We're not going to sit there and get in our own heads. So day game, respect the day game. We won't go out. But every night game on the road, it was the four amigos. We went out every single night. And then the families got together. And the Giants back in the day at Candlestick Park, gather around kids for FP stories, we would sit. Murph would bring us a big cooler. You know those big orange igloo coolers, those long ones? And they were full of Coors Lights. And we would sit there after games, and we would go out, and we would hug our significant others goodbye, pat the kids on the head, take them home, go to bed, and like Rob Nen, Richard Aurelia, Billy Miller, JT, I can keep going. 7, 8, 10 of us would sit there for 2 hours after the game in our sliding shorts with our eye blacks still on, talking about the game, talking about what we need to do to get better.
I'm going to drink it.
I'm like Pavlov, dude. Just rang the bell. I'm drooling over here like a dog. And we would sit there and talk
in
about...
In the dugout or in the clubhouse?
In the clubhouse. We just sit there in our sliding shorts with our, with you know, with our eye blacks still on, our t-shirts, our unis are already getting washed. And that,
probably not
hours,
on your phones and anything
not,
like that.
We didn't have phones. So we were just sitting there and talking about, like, what can we do to get better? Can you believe so-and-so did this? JK did this today. Like, I can't believe Dusty. We'd complain about Dusty all the time. Like, in a loving way. Like, can you believe Dusty pinch hit Charlie Hayes right there? Like, what are we doing? But it brought us closer together, and we were a team in every sense of the way. And I the Diamondbacks beat us that year. I guess the moral of the story is the game has changed. Guys are on their phones a lot now, and they don't stick around. And I understand. Everything changes and everything evolves. But that was a close bunch, man. And that's why when we still get together now and we have these reunions or we're together for Murph's Wall of Fame, Marvin Bernard, he used to hang out too, and we've been hanging out a lot lately. Like, we just start ragging on each other. And if people don't know, like, how you talk to each other in a clubhouse and you talk to each other in, like, a normal setting, like, Murph's Wall of Fame party was at Momo's. So his thing was so cool because usually it's like they're celebrating the 14 team coming up. This was every generation of Giant that ever walked through the clubhouse because they love Murph.
50-something years.
Dude, I was like a kid in a candy store. Like, grew up a Giants fan. I'm like, there's Terry. But oh, my God, I'm going nuts. So Marvin and I, we always rag on each other. And I'd say things like, hey, Marvin, you want to get on my shoulders so you can hear Murph talk? You know, you can't see. Like, and we're just ragging on each other back and forth. And the people that I brought there, like friends, they're like, oh, my God, do you guys hate each other? I'm like, no. This is how we show each other we love each other. This is how we talk to each other. This is baseball locker room talk, and I miss it. Because we used to just crush each other every single day. But we would be belly laughing so we couldn't breathe. And then when you do that in public, people look at you like, oh, my God, these guys have issues, and they don't like each
other. And I wonder if the modern player, not to get too deep inside the clubhouse walls, but I don't know if the modern player interacts with their fellow player that way anymore because of the sensitivity we all have because of social media. And like you said, you're on your phone so much. I wonder if that sort of jocularity exists at the same level anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not in there. What I do know, and I've talked to a lot of players about this, and I've become close with a few of them over the years, is what the comments on their Instagram and their comments on their Twitter, if they have a tough game, like, it's insane. We never had to go through that. Like, they'll pick up their phones after a game and there's death threats because they gave up 4 runs in 1 inning or they went 0-for-4. And the comments about their family and their wives and their kids, and we know where you live. I'm like, oh, my God, that's an aspect that we never had to go through. We knew we were sucking. I went on the other station a bunch as a Giants player, and I would do the interviews, but everyone told me, don't listen to that station because you just can't as a player. So players don't listen to sports talk radio for the most part. Maybe now it's changed. I don't know, with all the different mediums out there and they can see what you say on social media. But we just kept our head in the dirt. We head in the sand and we just played baseball. And once we got in that clubhouse, that was our sanctuary, man. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
Man, my time with the Giants was awesome.
I think, well, maybe, you know, life in a major league clubhouse has changed. I think also the Giants Dodgers rivalry has changed. And you're talking about the gulf between the teams right now, maybe the largest that it's been in a really, really long time. I mean, it's getting to a point where I have a couple of Dodger fan friends that have texted me over the last couple of years, more so more recently. And it's like, well, I wish the Giants were a little bit better because the Giants-Dodger rivalry is fun when both teams are good. And to hear that from a Dodger fan, to hear a Dodger fan say, I wish the Giants are better, that is the biggest insult that I think a Giants fan could possibly hear. And I was listening to Bonte on the Morning Roast earlier today. He was saying the same thing. He has a couple of friends who are Dodger fans, and they too have reached out to him and say, man, I'm feeling for you. I wish your team was a little bit better because it would make the Giants-Dodger rivalry a little bit more fun. And that those are Dodger fans saying to a Giants fan, I wish you were better. I can't think of anything worse I would want to hear from
a Dodger fan.
Do you
have a little brother? Worse. Or you have a big brother? Where are you on the pecking order?
Two older sisters.
Okay, so I don't know if you ever competed with them or if they ever got to the point where they wanted you to be better so they wouldn't have to, like, let you in or string you along. And I know that was the case for my brother, Doug. We would play Nerf hoop, and he's 4 years older, and he was a state championship basketball player. So even if we were the same age, I probably would have had no chance. But there was always that sense of him hoping that I'd be better because then it'd be more of a challenge. If I was closer to him, it'd be more competitive. It'd be more fun for him. And that's kind of where it is now with the Giants and Dodgers. And at least that's what I'm hearing you talk about with your Dodger friends. It's like the Giants aren't even a rival right now because they're 103 games behind since Farhan took over. That's not a rivalry.
You know, it's worse than that. The worst of what you said.
Yeah, what?
Is all the Dodger fans at the ballpark at Oracle.
That drives Mark Willard crazy.
Oh my gosh. Well, a sea of blue. Think about it. It's capitalism at its best. If you're a disgruntled Giants ticket holder and you don't like the way things are going, like you, Grandy, and like most fans right now, and some Dodger fan offers you X amount for your tickets for that game, and you're not going anyways, I mean, that makes sense. So how do you fix that? You win. You win, and you make the Giants fans want to go to every game, and then now the Dodgers fans don't take over Oracle Park like they have the last 2 or 3 years. Just got to win. Winning solves everything. Put a product out there that we get super excited about. This is our year. Isn't that the most romantic thing about baseball? Is like, this is our year. Like, when have Giants fans felt that and said that? Like, this is our year.
I'm not optimistic.
Like, I'm talking about, like, in spring training. Like, this is our year.
Well, this is probably one of the more optimistic spring trainings the Giants fans have had in a while. Once Blake Snell signed.
We didn't say this is our year.
Probably not.
You know, like, one of those like, that's the beauty and the romance of this game, where you can just have that feeling as a fan for your team of, like, this is our year.
Probably all the way back in, like, 2016, because you were just, even your magic, it's going to happen again.
Phillies.
Might have been the last time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Phillies fans probably said that this year.
Yeah, no
Dodger
doubt.
Fans, Yankee fans.
Yep.
Maybe even forever tortured Mets fans probably say that every year. Poor Mets fans, man. You talk about a fan base that I actually feel sorry for, and being around the East Coast for 11 years. Mets fans are great fans, man. They just something. They Mets every year, and they know that they're going to Mets every year. And so they're prepared for it. But I'm sure there's a handful of teams in baseball that say this is our year. And I think it would be cool if there was more teams that could say that. But there's so much parody and mediocrity in baseball. I'm sure Reds fans didn't say this is our year this year.
But I don't think Arizona fans said that last year. So I do think that your mentality of being a fan now is different because of the amount of parity. And I mentioned this earlier, where the two best teams in baseball are barely above 60%. They're at 607 and 604 in a winning percentage. So even if you're a Giants fan and you don't go into the year thinking this is our year, you do think we could be a wild card team and then we could make some noise. And I think that that's the new mentality among most fan bases, because there aren't dominant teams. Now, if you're the Dodgers, if you're the Yankees, yeah, it's always our year, because you know you're going to load up. You're most likely going to be good. And, you know, you get into the playoffs, and if you're a Dodger fan, you're probably disappointed at how you always seem to flame out in October, other than the pandemic bubble chip that you got. So there's that PTSD. But
don't say it like that. You think that's a legit championship?
It is. But what I did, FP, is I put it into proper context, because it was a pandemic. It was a bubble, and they got the chip. Pandemic bubble chip doesn't mean that they get, as my partner Mark Willard says, they get like 0.34 of a championship and the Lakers get 0.44. No, a chip is a chip, and it sucks that they won it, but I like Grandy's attitude from earlier. If you're going to win one, win that one.
Yeah.
Because in the history of baseball, you want to look at every single World Series won and rank them in terms of coolness. That one's at or on the bottom of the barrel. But it's still a championship.
The cardboard fans are running on the field.
The maskless COVID patient is breathing on everyone. We talk about this because we have our annual golf tournament in Truckee, the Cal Pacific. This year was the 36th annual, and we talked about it before the tourney that, you know, one of the 36 has to be the 36th best one. And we all were reflecting on which one it was, and I won't dwell on it because the guy who won it that year, there was controversy, there was scandal, but it goes down as the 36th best tournament that we've ever had. So when the Dodgers win a World Series and you want to look at all the World Series ever won, that might be the worst of all, yeah. But it's subjective.
Yeah, I think their slogan that year was, we're all vaccinated.
Right.
I think that's their slogan. How about
the Giants
slogan? How about this is our year for the Giants slogan? The Giants... I got to be careful.
No, I have to. I'll say it.
How is this year not "Say Hey 24" as the slogan? It's 2024. It's the only time it's going to be 24. You have the greatest player in the history of baseball. I'm saying before he passed, like "Say Hey 24" would have been a great slogan for.
Would have been perfect. Instead, they just racked back last year's slogan and used it again.
Nothing like it.
And it's funny because the Spanish, I can't even remember what you remember, Granny. Yeah. You're so good.
Nada como ese.
Nadie como nosotros. And if you nothing put that like into us. Google Translate, it just spits out nothing. Nobody likes us.
Nobody like us.
Yeah.
If you put it into Google Translate, not the official accurate translation, but if you put it into Google Translate, it's basically saying nobody likes
us. There's probably millions of dollars spent on that. And then if you change it, it's more millions of dollars. So once you get one, you got to stick with it for. But like, come on, Giants, hang in there. Like all those slogans as a kid growing up. I don't think a slogan
stands the test of time.
Yeah. Baby.
Next year is 25, Barry Bonds' number. So do you do something around Barry Bonds? Do you make it a Barry Bonds celebratory year?
They didn't make it about Willie, then I don't think they're going to make it about Barry.
I think Balco 25 is where we're going.
How about something like, these bonds are strong?
Oh, God. Barry's there every day, man. It's good to see him around the ballpark. He looks great. He's like Benjamin Button, man. He's getting younger every year. He looks so good. He's at the yard every day. He's in the cage with those guys every day. I talk to him every day. I love that he's involved, man. I love that he's there. Every homestand, every game, he's there.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
888-957-9570. We've been slowly getting through some of the things Dave Fleming said on the morning roast earlier today. It wasn't all just Debbie Downer from Dave, which is what makes Dave so good. He's always able to see the bright side of things. And this was his take on some of the things that are going well for the San Francisco Giants. Talking about some of the youngsters that have come up and played well lately for the San Francisco Giants. And here's Dave talking about how maybe you wish this could have happened earlier, but better late than never. Here's Dave.
If this year had happened 2 years ago, everybody would be ecstatic. Not at the record, but the stuff that you're talking about, Birdsong, Harrison, Bailey, Fitzgerald, Ramos, maybe Matos, and there are other young guys who have contributed. Jung-Hoo Lee, before he got hurt, looking like, okay, that can be a guy who can play out there for the next 5 years. There is now a core of young Giants who you feel like this can be the next really good Giants team. These guys can be the heart and soul of it. We have not said that for a long time. Like, it's been since the championship era that we've been able to say that. That's the missing piece for this franchise. That's the ultimate thing. As much as, you know, it's fun to chase after Judge and Harper and Carlos Correa and all these guys, that's how you get to where you want to go. And finally, we've had a year where that is starting to happen. Has it happened enough? No. But these guys, some of these guys especially, are really young, just starting their journeys. This would be a year. It's just frustrating that it's taken so long to get here.
Flem's right. Like, if this was a year that happened, you saw the development of Elliot Ramos, and you got what you got from Hayden Birdsong, and from Kyle Harrison, and from Patrick Bailey, and this happened a couple of years ago, earlier in the Farhan tenure, and you were able to look at into the future at year six, where we currently are right now, with all of those guys as established, legitimate big leaguers, it would be easier to be a little more excited about the future and what has gone down in this system. But what becomes frustrating is it's year six, and we're just now beginning to see those dividends being paid. Yeah. Dave is right. If it happened a couple of years ago, it's an entirely different conversation and feeling, I think, for a lot of Giants fans.
It's an excuse, but I think it's a justified one that the 2020 year was a lost year for all these guys. So
yeah, they didn't play.
So all these young guys, and you look at the reference, baseball reference, Birdsong, Harrison, Luciano Matos, they're all 22. And then you got a group of 24-year-olds, including Ramos, and then Schmidt's 25, Wisely and Bailey, 25. It still is a very young core. You're right, Grandy. If this all happened last year, for example, you'd feel better about the Farhan Zaidi era. But then again, they're here now. So Dave's right. You do have a certain amount of a core team that you're going to expect to be back next year, FP.
Yeah, that's cool and all, but they got to play. They got to be good.
True.
And there's a lot of question marks still with all of them. You know, right when you think Elliot Ramos is an all-star, the league found out that he's having trouble with a high fastball and they're going up there. So you got to make the adjustment on that. I still think he's an everyday big league player. We'll see if he's a perennial all-star. I'm not sure about that. I think the guy that has a chance to be a perennial all-star is Patrick Bailey. And we'll see how that plays out. And that's all going to depend on how bad he wants it, how much he wants to work for that. When you talk about Tyler Fitzgerald, he has the most talent and the most upside of anybody, I think, in the organization from a position player standpoint. He has the best skill set. But then there's other things he's got to work on. He's got to work on his defense at shortstop, even though it's been really good lately. He mishandled the double play last night. He has a lot of swing and miss. If he can put the ball in play consistently, he can hit 300 because he's going to beat out a lot of ground balls. Luis Matos, for me, has a longer way to go than you would think. Like, his routes in the outfield are not good, and the ball's not coming off his bat. Like, I would like it to. Like, I think he's got warning track power right now, and I would love him, as Gabe said, and I thought Gabe was pretty accurate last year, that he'll grow into his body and become a power hitter someday. Elliot Ramos is a grown-ass man, and that's what I want Luis Matos to look like soon, where you just kind of fill out and you look like a big leaguer. And I think Brett Wisely might be the sneaky one of all of them right now. Like, I really love his game. I love the way he approaches the game on a daily basis. And I'm just talking about the young players right now. Hayden Birdsong has confidence off the charts. He's cocky. He's got arrogance. He's got swagger. And he's got stuff to back it up. And more importantly, he knows now that his stuff plays at this level. And nothing's going to stop him. Like, he's going to have hiccups. He's going to get hit. He's going to have command issues at times where he walks a few guys. And he throws 97. Someone's going to pop one out of the yard. It's not going to be 10 punchies every time out for Hayden Birdsong. There's going to be a learning curve here. But I just love what I'm seeing from that kid right now. And there's other guys down there. So I guess the reason I'm going down the list here is they're all good players. But I'm spoiled. I've been around Bryce Harper when he was a rookie. I was around Juan Soto when he was a rookie. So, you know, that's what I think of. I was around Steven Strasburg when he was a rookie. Like, those are horses, man. Like, those are the guys.
You know that they're going to be great.
You just know. You see Hall of Famer with the position players that I met. I saw Trey Turner as a rookie. So, like, my scale is, like, if you're going to change the course of a franchise, are these guys stars? Are these guys future stars? Are these guys perennial all-stars? Are these guys going to have multiple parades on Market Street? And that's kind of the question for me that has to be answered. There's a lot of potential there. These are some really good players, but I don't think there's one along the lines of the name as I mentioned, but like those are pretty lofty names.
Right. And, you know, we didn't think at the time that, you know, Matt Cain, yeah, he could be really good. And Madison Bumgarner, highly drafted. Tim Lincecum, these are guys who you had high hopes for, but you didn't think immediately that these guys were going to be superstars. And then they turned out to be three-time champs.
Big-time Timmy Jim, I did.
Yeah. Ooh. Well,
That was an event, man. That guy's such a rock star. I don't know that I've seen a rock star with the Giants, including Barry Bonds, like Tim Lincecum did. Like,
so
when he pitched, it was like a day. We used to call it this Lincecum day. Like, in the walk-ups on the days he pitched, like, he'd like have 5,000 to 7,000 walk-ups on the day. Like, Lincecum day, man, he was an event. What a rock star. Have the Giants, besides Willie Mays, ever had a rock star like Tim Lincecum? And that's no offense to Barry, because Barry's a rock star in his own right. We all went to see Barry hit balls in the water, but, like, Lincecum was next level. Like, he was a legit rock star.
It's everything about him. It was how small he was, just the craziness of his windup and the stuff that was just so unbelievable. The splitter coming off a 94, 95 mile an hour fastball, the leg kick, the hair, and the fact that he was a big fan of the lettuce.
Brian, he fit in this area.
He fit in perfectly. Let Timmy smoke.
Brian Wilson's in the conversation, too, by the way, for Giants that were rock stars.
Good call.
Yeah. A legit rock star, on and off.
On and off, thank you.
On and off the field.
Pat the bat.
The marina's never been the same.
Well, you know, you talk about your little group that you'd hang out with and go out with, and that Giants team, they had their own little core four, so to speak.
Oh, my goodness. They did some damage.
Yep, no doubt.
They did some damage. The Pat Burrell, I got to stop. I got to remember there's a microphone. I'm going to stop. All the stories are amazing from 2010. I got
and
so many.
All the
of
stories
them.
That you hear, and not only from you, but just from like civilians out there, most of them are true.
Yeah.
Oh, I ran into so and so on this random Saturday night.
Was it iPhone?
Wednesday night.
The iPhone was 2011, right? The first iPhone? Or was it? No.
That sounds. I'm an Android guy, so I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. You got the.
You guys are in the cult.
So I just can't handle green text messages, dude.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
I just don't like them. I look at them differently. I don't know what that makes me.
Well, it makes you just like the other 85% of Americans. And I've actually.
Please, here we go. Get on his.
Look what you started.
Soapbox. It's not a soapbox.
It's a political thing. Go.
It's a cult. All of you are in a cult. You're all slave to your inferior device. And it cracks me up that you all will go down with your phones and your computers that break. And meanwhile, my elite advanced device, shout out Asia.
Well, first iPhone was 07, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, those guys still got away with it. They still got away with it in 2010.
And cameras weren't really a huge part of the early devices.
Every good team has to have a dark side. You can't have a bunch of guys that I don't know, that are librarians and try to win a World Series. You think about the greatest teams ever, the 86 Mets, the 2001 A's that I was on. We won 102 games. We stayed out till 4 in the morning every night. The Giants in 2010. Those guys loved each other. They did everything together.
Think about Mickey Mantle back in his day, the Mick.
All great teams have a dark side, and they all hang out together. All great athletes have a dark side, by the way.
And you're talking about Timmy Lincecum. It's Timmy Day, Lincecum Day. You tune in to watch. Everyone shows up to the ballpark to watch. The Giants have a handful of really good pitchers, but you got no one just that electric that's attracting fans.
Rock star. I miss that guy.
You don't have a rock star.
And their guy tonight is the guy who's probably the closest, and he just throws 87 and induces ground balls.
He's
so
incredibly effective.
He's very good and effective, but he's not a rock star.
It's not on Timmy's level.
No, they don't have anybody.
I don't know if there ever will be.
Right.
Maybe if Hayden Birdsong just starts smoking pot, he'll be that guy.
Why don't you go suggest it?
We'll find out.
Head down to the park and go ahead and drop that on him.
Yeah. So we got to take a break. FP's going to head down to the ballpark. Thanks for stopping by this week, FP.
You're the best.
Have a safe flight tomorrow. All right, we're going to take a break. It's Dibs and Grandy saying bye to FP. We're back for one more segment coming up on the other side. First, though, I did want to remind you, you should join 95.7 The Game at Harding Park on Friday, September 6th for the Pettinelli Financial Partners Golf Tournament benefiting the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. Go to 957thegame.com to learn more. Presented by ATCO Pest Control, the Bay Area's locally family-owned pest control company. More Willard and Dibs next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back, Willard and Dibs. One final segment here on a Wednesday on 95.7 The Game, but no Mark Willard today or this whole week. It's Stan Dibley and Mark Grandy. You heard FP for the first 3 days of the week. He's taken off to get down to the ballpark for Giants and A's, and he's off for the rest of the week as he's heading to Cincinnati for the Giants and Reds series, which begins on Friday. It's been great with FP this week, but it'll be Dibs and I for the final 2 days of the week. Looking forward to that. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? Those guests today include Bobby Evans, former GM of the San Francisco Giants. He joined us a couple of hours ago here on Willard and Dibs. Also, Dave Fleming, voice of the Giants, who was on with Bonte and Shasky this morning on the Morning Roast. And you will be able to hear that conversation, Bonte, Shasky, and Flem, on Best of the Game, hosted by Lucas Alexander. That's coming up in about 15 15 minutes or so here on 95.7 The Game. And if you haven't heard it yet, or if you have, it's worth listening to a second time. But it's especially if you haven't heard it, I recommend if you're driving home, if you're listening on the Odyssey app, whatever you're doing, keep it locked through that interview at the very least, because you're going to want to hear what Flem had to say. But Dibs, I wanted to, in the final 10 minutes of the show, go back to something we briefly mentioned maybe an hour ago or so. You got a good feeling maybe there's going to be some news in the Brandon Ayuk camp coming soon over the next couple of days.
Well, I just don't want to read too much into what we saw at camp today, but Ayuk just made a beeline for John Lynch and
he was walking kind of slow,
but he was just walking directly toward John Lynch. It wasn't like he was out there hanging out and he happened to bump into John Lynch. He saw John Lynch and he made a beeline for him.
It was a direct path.
He went directly to John Lynch, shook his hand. He interrupted what John was doing at practice. John was throwing some footballs, and he went right up to John, and there was a handshake, which was cool, and it was more than just look at you, good to see you. I thought there was more purpose to it, more purpose behind it, and then he goes another 5 yards, and Kyle Shanahan comes over to him, and it's a big bro hug, two pats on the back, and then as the handshake was breaking, there was a brief exchange of words. And I got a very warm feeling from that exchange, as if to say, BA, good to see you. Glad to have you back. Can't wait to have you out here.
Glad we got that behind us. Let's rock.
Basically.
Yay!
So, and again, no details on any contract that's been signed, but it felt to me like something was very close to happening with Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers that would get him to be back on the field. And I don't think that if Brandon and the Niners decided or agreed that he would play his fifth year option, I don't think that exchange would have happened. I think Brandon Ayuk would have just started practicing at some point.
Yeah, if Ayuk is playing on his fifth year option, it doesn't seem like something Ayuk is going to purposely walk over to John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan about. He's going to be practicing and getting ready to play, but maybe a little bit upset about it.
Right. I don't know if there's bro hugs and if there's, you know, that level of an exchange. So he's been holding in camp, but not practicing. And big deal, it's day 7 today. So you haven't even gotten really much involved. I know you've had, one padded practice or two padded practices, I think.
Yeah, this might be the second or the third padded practice.
Maybe the second. But either way, you haven't gotten so deep into the process that he won't be able to be ready for the opener in September. So just seeing that exchange today made me feel confident that this little story is going to be put behind us soon.
Interesting. Let's see if it does. And if it does, it is going to be interesting, because I think there's a lot of us trying to kind of figure out doing the math and figuring out what the Niners are balancing. I think a lot of us got to a point, Dibs, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I felt like a lot of us think that maybe ultimately it was going to come down to Ayuk just playing on the fifth year option and the Niners maybe being willing to take the risk that maybe he's a little bit unhappy. There's not really a lot that Ayuk can do about it. The team has him under control for this year, for next year, and the following year if they so choose. And maybe there's a reality that signing him to a contract, a major contract, hurts your chances to get other players back in the future. So ultimately, if this is a contract extension, I am going to be very, very excited to see what the number is. Because there's a thought that even if you thought you could get it done, maybe it's not the best thing to get it done at this stage. Maybe it's best to just wait a little bit longer.
I guess, but you know, you don't want an unhappy player. We've all kind of agreed to that. And if Brandon Ayuk is going to be unhappy and he's been holding in, so you want him to feel like the team has faith in him to go out there and not only be a Niner for this year, but for years to come. And it will be interesting if the deal gets done, what the average annual value is, because we all fixate on that number, even though it's the less important number than what's the actual total guaranteed at signing. There's three numbers that come out. Well, four, really. The overall total, the average annual value, the guarantee, and then the total guaranteed at signing. For me, that's the number that will be most interesting to see, because the Niners are a team that does have a lot of cash. So they might be able to structure this so that he gets a lot of money up front in a signing bonus that then gets prorated over the life of the contract, thereby lessening the cap hit over the years that he is going to be a 49er.
There's another big name wide receiver that just got a deal as well. There's been so many of them over the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 months, even going into the NFL season. DJ Moore Now the Chicago Bears, four-year, $110 million contract, including $82.6 million guaranteed. 4 years, $110 million. That is in the ballpark for Brandon Ayuk. That's a little more than $25 million a year. Ayuk maybe reportedly asking, hoping for more, maybe closer to 30. You never quite know, but that's a similar number to what it ultimately might be for Brandon Ayuk and the Niners.
Yeah, that's 27.5 per year. And you mentioned the guarantee, which is a huge, huge percentage. Is that 84, you said?
82.6.
And that's the guaranteed. Now, the question is, what's the guaranteed at signing, the total guaranteed at signing? And I'm looking at it right here, and that number's not out yet. But that number is the one ultimately that I would have an eye on to watch, because Amon-Ra St. Brown got $30 million per year, $30 million and a slight bit more a year. But his total guaranteed at signing is not that big. It's in the $30 million range.
Yeah, so there's two guarantee numbers.
Right.
There's the guarantee that assumes basically you're healthy throughout the length of the contract. You don't get cut.
Exactly.
And then there's the fully guaranteed at signing, which no matter what happens, you are getting that amount. We don't know that amount just yet.
Exactly. And that, to me, is the one that, you know, the average annual might be smaller than what Brandon Ayuk was asking for. But if the actual total guaranteed at signing is bigger, then it doesn't really matter. Because, you know, if Brandon has faith in himself and he's going to be healthy and you're going to play out the life of the contract, well, then you're going to get the full contract anyway. But if something bad happens, then at least you would know you'd have $40 million totally guaranteed at signing.
Yeah.
So
in case of emergency, you're still getting that.
Right. So we'll see. And if the Niners are a team that has a lot of cash, and David Lombardi from The Athletic has always said that, then you can guarantee more of it and have your average annual be a little bit smaller, thereby lessening your cap burden as the years go on.
And it's probably, I mean, there's so many different, I don't know,
different ways to structure contracts. Yeah. You're right.
And it kind of makes your head spin when you try to think about the ways they can fit this all into the cap and give them enough flexibility to consider a Mooney Ward extension in the future, a Diamador Lenore extension in the future, all of these things.
And also a Trent Williams restructure,
that's
right?
Exactly what I was going to go to as
Sorry.
Well.
I mean, because that still is sitting out there where, you know, I haven't seen Trent walk up to John Lynch or Kyle Shanahan. He's actually holding out.
He hasn't been in camp at all.
Right. So that one, I thought that one would happen before Brandon Ayuk, but ever since this video dropped a few hours ago, it feels like maybe Ayuk will actually get done first.
Yeah, and if you're just joining us, you're wondering what we're talking about. There's no official news, but there was training camp video footage came out showing Brandon Ayuk in street clothes. He's wearing like a black tracksuit almost, it looks like. He walks up to first John Lynch. They give a brief little handshake, dap, little bro hug, and then they move on. And coming almost running into the screen, Kyle Shanahan, he daps up Brandon Ayuk. He pats him on the back like two or three times. They share a brief word, and then Shanahan turns back around and goes back to doing whatever coaching he was doing. But you're right, it did feel a little bit more positive than just another, all right, good to see you. Hopefully we make progress today. It did seem a little bit more positive than that.
Yeah, and for the Niners, the sooner they can get both of those guys in camp, the better, because right now the storylines around camp, other than Brock Purdy getting picked off on the regular, is Ayuk's deal, Trent wanting more money, and if you're a Niner team and you want to focus on a season, you want to have these secondary storylines be put to bed.
Yeah. No doubt. And what is, I mean, if you ask Niner fans, more important to winning this coming season, Trent Williams or Brandon Ayuk? I think most people would say Trent Williams.
Agreed.
And there would not be much of a doubt, I think. So hopefully they both get done. Maybe there's a little bit of momentum on the Brandon Ayuk front. I'm sure a Trent Williams deal will get done at some point relatively soon, but we'll see. Maybe the Ayuk thing happens first. Whenever it does happen, if it does happen, we'll have you, of course, covered on 95.7 The Game. All right, that'll do it for us today, Dibs. A pleasure as always, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, huh?
That'll be fun. Looking forward to it.
That's Dibs for FP, who took off 20 minutes ago. Thanks so much to FP, for Lucas behind the glass, and Carter. Appreciate all your work. We'll be back tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game. But what's coming up next is Best of the Game, which is brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Lucas Alexander has you covered next. You will hear Voice of the Giants, Dave Fleming, on the way first, coming up right after this break. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Mark Grandy, signing off. Have a great rest of your Wednesday.
Passionate.
We're done being light years away from the Dodgers. We're done being lapped by the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Raw emotion.
Now I'm fired up about the Giants. Farhan, you got a day off. Let's cook, baby. Cook, cook, cook.
Voice of the fans.
Your consumer base has said, I don't care how many 82-win teams you can produce. We are done watching this crap.
Fan reaction.
The dude is a numbers cruncher. He just wants to hang around 500, man.
That's what we're going to give you every single day. The Bay Area's sports station, 95.7 The Game.
This is Larry Fleck, owner of The Floor Store. Our summer sale is heating up, and it's about to start sizzling. Now to August 5th, you'll get $250 off every $1,000 you spend on carpet, hardwood, waterproof flooring, quartz countertops, and more. $250 off every $1,000 at 18 months interest-free financing, and we're smoking hot. The Floor Store's summer sale. It's not just hot, it's sizzling. Go to floorstores.com to find the nearest of our 9 Bay Area showrooms, from Santa Rosa to San Jose. The Floor Store, your Bay Area flooring authority.
Life hack number 7. Get an iPhone 12 on Straight Talk.
Life hack.
Here's how it works. You walk into Walmart, go to the electronics section, ask for iPhone 12 with 5G and a dual camera system, and select a new Silver Unlimited plan. They'll smile because it's a good plan. You get real.